Welcome to Visible by Numbers with your host, Allison Bachman.
Hello and welcome to Visible by Numbers, being broadcast on BBS Radio, the number one radio station on the internet. And this is your host, Allison, and I thank you for being here this evening. And I hope that everyone is doing well. I just have a real quick note before I start the program. I sent out in my newsletter regarding this Sunday in Doylestown, which that's the 14th. And I was scheduled to do private readings, live readings in Doylestown for Susan Duvall Seminars. And I had it marked as being sold out, and I don't know why I thought that it was. But Susan has told me that there is available spots. So if you're interested, if you live in the southeastern Pennsylvania area, New Jersey, if you're interested in getting a live in-person reading with me, hey, get in touch with Susan Duvall at SusanDuvallSeminars.com, and that's this Sunday, the 14th. Now, it's my pleasure to bring you this evening my special guest, who is the author of a very beautiful book called Dare to Wear Your Soul on the Outside. My guest this evening is Dr. Gloria Burgess. And so let me just tell you a little bit about her. She is, of course, the author of Dare to Wear Your Soul on the Outside, Legacy Living, and she's also the author of three books on poetry. She's a very highly regarded inspirational speaker. She is the founder and principal of Principal Jazz Incorporated, a leadership consulting and executive coaching firm. She's founder and executive director of the Lift Every Voice Foundation, which is a nonprofit dedicated to leadership development for underrepresented K through 12 students. She also teaches leadership and management for several universities, and also she teaches in diverse corporate and organizational settings. And so she's really got quite the background here, but tonight we're going to talk about this book of hers, so I want to bring her on and welcome her to the show. Hi there, Gloria. How you doing?
Hi, Allison. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, you know, I thought that your book would be something that I could manage to read in a week. I found that it isn't.
Well, you know, in the opening part of my book, I actually advise readers to slow down and just take it in bite-sized chunks, because that's the kind of book it is. I mean, you can read it for the stories, the inspirational stories, as you know, Allison.
Sure.
Or you can slow it down and go through the exercises. It really is about slowing down to metabolize what's in it.
So, right. Yeah. Well, I had such a crazy, I mean, my schedule's been totally insane, and so I was like trying to get to it, and then I finally, when I did, I was like, oh my God, this cannot be absorbed in the amount of time that I have, so I'm going to extend my apologies in advance and say I did not get all the way through the book. But what I do want to say is that, you know, the one thing that struck me most is that so often when we're living our lives, just, you know, basically trying to make a living, put a roof over ourselves, raise our families, or whatever the case might be, we don't slow down enough to examine things like who we really truly are, mm-hmm. or what our life purpose is, yet alone design a roadmap of how to get there. And I think that from what I got from reading this book, that this book really could be very instrumental in beginning that process. And that's kind of what I've taken away from it so far. Am I on a little bit accurate here? Or?
You are. And, you know, no apologies. This is no apologies necessary. I appreciate that you began the book, and I hope you do complete it at some point. But the gist of the book really is all about helping people get clear about who they are, about what they're here to do on this planet, and to be, you know, to give it back, if you will, to be a service to other people. So it's not just about getting your own act together, Allison. It's about doing that and also taking it on the road so that you can be, mm-hmm. you know, a bridge for somebody else.
Sure. And, you know, what kind of fascinated me, I mean, I'm not sure if you're aware of the fact that I'm a numerologist, so I actually am able to, you know, by looking at people's names and date of birth, and also pick up their energy based on their stories as well. And, of course, your book, you know, the onset of the book is talking about your father's experience with William Faulkner,
mm-hmm.
who is a Nobel Peace Prize winning in literature, I believe, well-known author, and it's about your father's story and how that became your inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And the very strong humanitarian tones in your father, and certainly in your book, and certainly even if you were to go back and actually look at William Faulkner, there's very strong humanitarian tones there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that I do like about the book is it's not only about self-discovery, but it's also with what you discover of taking that and playing it forward and trying to use your energy to make a positive effect on this world. And it was very, very, you know, from what I can see, it's a very strong theme.
It is a strong theme, and it's the theme that actually runs through my life right now. And, you know, pay it forward is one way to talk about it. I talk about passing it on because I don't like the idea of money being involved at all. And, so that's really what my life is about. It certainly was passed on to me. And the key notion in all of this is this, what I call legacy, Allison. And, you know, for some people, they connect with that word right away, and they go, oh, yeah, why? You know, I know what that means. And for other people, and I'm going to say the majority of our culture here in the U.S., we typically associate legacy with something that's connected with death and dying, but that's not what I mean legacy. That's not what I mean by legacy here.
It's what you leave after you die.
Yeah, what you leave after you die. And that's you know, a very small part of it, but I'm talking about being conscious and on purpose and intentional about the life that you're living right now.
Sure.
Because that's the legacy that we leave behind.
Sure.
And so the goal is to become conscious because, you know, a lot of us go through life on autopilot.
Sure.
you know, we kind of step into this life that is intended for somebody else because somebody else thought it was a good idea, usually one of our parents or maybe mm-hmm. both of them or a teacher or, you know, whatever. And we say yes to these agendas for our life without really thinking them through or because, you know, dad or mom's going to pay for college and we, you know, better major in this or that subject rather than what we are truly meant to study.
Mm-hmm.
And we end up, you know, living lives for, you know, many, many years that are not our own.
So
my work and my message is all about helping people get on their track, on the right track, on their track
mm-hmm.
With their life.
Right. I think that we kind of live parallel lives doing different things, but I think our message is basically the same, I think, in my work and also in yours. And I think that's why I resonated to your book as much as I did, because, you know, I really believe in being authentic and understanding who you are and being able to look at that and celebrate that and be inspired
mm-hmm.
by that. And so, you know, and there was this one thing that you wrote here, and, of course, I think I've said it 1,000 times, perhaps not in the same words, but
mm-hmm.
in your book, you say, our culture would have us believe that success is defined by wealth, power, fame, influence, prestige, and position. However, the true measure of success is defined by only one thing, your capacity to be your authentic self. And that right there, to me, you know, I must have said that 1,000,000 times. So
mm-hmm.
I was like, I resonated to that a great deal because I really think that you have to know who you are and you have to live by that because it's only in that that you can be joyful in living. And so I think that's a very strong message in your book, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, you know, being real and living to tell about it, I think. you know, so again, so many of us, I think, we settle for a life that's too small for us, or
mm-hmm.
we kind of hide out, we edit ourselves, we pretend to be something that we're not. And, you know, the price that we pay is that we end up passing that on to our children.
Sure.
And then we wonder why they, you know, don't find the satisfaction in life that we want them to.
Sure.
When in fact we've kind of laid out this blueprint for them to follow in our footsteps.
Well,
and so again, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I think that when you think about being born and you're basically, you know, as you grow, you're trying to figure out how to fit in. And certainly the goal is to be loved and accepted. And so you're trying to figure out, well, what is this being human and how do I fit into society? And you begin to listen to what your parents tell you, you know, and what your friends and eventually your teachers and, you know, and so it is just a, you know, nothing but a constant stream of other people telling you who you are as opposed to sitting down and figuring out who you are.
That's right.
And that all has to do with trying to fit in and be loved, I really think.
Exactly, and to belong. You know, we all want to be a part of some group, you know, especially as young kids.
Sure. Go ahead.
For me, you know, I grew up in the 1950s and 60s, Allison, mm-hmm. and my parents actually were a blessing to me because they kind of told me who I was and what I could be, and they didn't set any boundaries or limits to that. But at that particular time in our country, you know, the folks outside of my family were telling me to stay put. You know, I couldn't do this or that because I was too dark skinned or my lips didn't look, you know, they weren't the right shape or, mm-hmm. you know, my hair was too this or that. And so I actually went through a lot of confusion about who I was as a little girl and as a young adult, you know, just trying to fit in, you know, be what my parents told me I could be. But outside of the house, you know, I was getting entirely different messages. And so, you know, my journey was about reconciling that and getting, you know, getting over it and working through it. But it took me many, many years to do that. Mm-hmm. And my gift, if you will, you know, because I think that we have our lessons for a reason, is to help make it a little bit smoother and a little bit easier for other people going through that right now.
Right, exactly. And I really think that you clearly demonstrated that in the book. And by the way, I think we were born in the same year. So,
I'm curious about your background. I did do just a little bit of research on you, and I was fascinated by your work with numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't know very much about numerology, but
it is a philosophy more or less, and quite honestly, you don't know anything about numbers, but whether you realize it or not, you know, there's so much spiritual philosophy that's in your words, and I see you as being a messenger. When I look at, I mean, I don't know what your numbers are. We didn't discuss that, but I really see you as being a messenger. I really see you also as having special purpose of you know, changing, you know, different things in humanity by offering a gift that can change and help others. And really, that's what this book is. Yeah. I really think that anyone that would pick this book up and work with this book and open themselves to this book and let it be a process of awakening, I think that they would be much better off by the time I got done with it.
Well, you know, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I've been blessed to work with people from all walks of life, Allison. I was just, you know, I work with battered women who have been in horrible relationships. I work with prisoners who are in their halfway period. You know, they're transitioning out of jail or prison and trying to belong again and fit into the general culture again in their families and so on. And I also work with leaders in organizations and corporations. And so, you know, my work sort of has this broad spectrum to it. But as you pointed out earlier, I think we all have the same basic needs, you know, whether our lives have been, you know, blown, you know, whether we've been kind of pushed around by our families or in relationships or, you know, by our culture or whatever, or not. And that's that fundamental need to be loved and to belong. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say to belong to something bigger than we are.
Right. You know? Exactly. Well, I, you know, as I said, on so many levels, my work and how I feel about life and what I've learned in my message of life very much mirrors, you know, a lot of what you said in this book. And it also is kind of interesting because if we go back to the numbers thing, you know, really our especially in these years of our life, we are here to make a contribution to society.
Absolutely.
It is part of what our purpose is, anyone born in the year that you and I were born. So we do come as humanitarians. We do come with a message, and we do come to try to, you know, put that positive effect out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the aspect about, you know, using your energy to, you know, for me, I actually have this daily to-do list, and actually on my daily to-do list, it says, you know, be kind to someone, do something nice for someone. It's part of my daily do list, you know, because I just really feel that I also firmly believe in reaping what you sow. So why would you not sow love and kindness?
Mm.
If you sow that, then it'll be returned back to you tenfold. So always send out nothing but, you know, goodness and love.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's talk for a moment, because I'm assuming that your book was written because your your family, your father, your mother, they inspired you to write this book. Would that be?
I would say that both my parents certainly had a lot of influence on me in writing this book.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the more that I talk about it and think about it, I always, you know, talk about my father, and he's, you know, a primary instigator in this book. But my mother has played such a huge role in my life as well, Allison, so I want to give her props as well. You know, I actually opened the book, my first chapter, with a little quote from her. Her name is Mildred McEwen, and it says, make yourself useful. Make yourself useful. And, you know, when I was a little girl, you know, back in, you know, when Oxford, Mississippi, which is where I was born and grew up partially, you know, she would always be after me and my older two sisters to do our chores and to, you know, do even more beyond our chores and to, mm-hmm. you know, count our blessings and all of that. And even though we were, you know, busy doing things, or we had just sat down after, you know, doing everything that we were asked to do, told to do, she would say, oh, make yourself useful, you know. And, you know, it was so irritating when I was a little girl to hear those words. But I think about it now, and I talk to her now. She's almost 80 years old. And I say, you know, thank you so much, Mother, for blessing me and all of my sisters with those words, because the reason that I do what I do today is because she whispered those words. Sometimes she screamed them at us, you know. But those are words of looking beyond yourself and, mm-hmm. and not having it be about you, but mm-hmm. to, you know, focus on somebody beyond yourself. And when you're doing that, you know, life not only goes better, but mm-hmm. like you said, what you put out comes back to you.
Right. Well,
and you don't do it for that purpose, but it does anyway.
It does anyway.
Yeah.
But also what you do to someone else, you do to yourself, you know, basically that same thing. Now, you coined, or, you know, according to what it says in the book, that you actually coined the phrase, dare to wear your soul on the outside. And it's a beautiful title for a book. And certainly, you know, that's going to catch my eye, because I'm going to want to know what that's all about.
Yes.
Being I'm a very soulful person. But anyhow.
Well, you are. Dare to wear your soul on the outside is actually a line from one of my poems. And the poem is in the book. It's called Song to Myself. And it's one of those, you know, preachy kind of poems where you kind of talk at other people.
Sure.
And I called it Song to Myself because I truly believe that my gift and my legacy, my work on the planet, is to help other people help, you know, get their light to shine. It's to shine my own, but by doing that, I demonstrate and I model for other people what it's like. And it kind of gives them permission to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, the focus is not about you. It's about letting your light shine so that you can help other people do it. You can help be of service to others. You can make yourself useful, so to speak.
Make yourself useful. Bless your mother. Yeah, that's really funny. What I do love about the book, as I said, is besides, I mean, you have some beautiful examples of stories in people's lives. You have the story of your father is very touching and wonderful. And, of course, you know, when I was, you know, going back to my own history, I was a little kid that just loved biographies, and I just, it fascinated me, how did a person get from being born in humble beginnings? One of my most favorite biographies, actually, was George Washington Carver.
Mm.
And it always fascinated me, how did you get from where you were born to be such a great, you know, inventor? And so that is really kind of what started my journey with trying to discover what destiny was and what our soul purpose was, and that's kind of the focus of mine. So I love the story of your father. I love that, the serendipitous, those events in our lives that change our lives, and I thought that was beautiful. So you've got a lot of beautiful stories that are woven in here, of examples of people's lives and different things. But I love the exercises. I truly think that the exercises are very thought-provoking, and they make you pause, and they make you examine perhaps things that you've not taken the time to examine. And then also, you know, contemplate action, like, okay, now that I've discovered this, you know, what do I do about this? And I think that makes, it's not so much telling somebody what to do, but it's also asking them to look within so they can answer that question.
Yeah, and I'm glad you pointed that out because as I was writing the book, I was really trying not to tell people what to do and to be preachy about it, mm-hmm. but to more to take the stance of inviting them to take a look at, number one, what they already have as resources inside of them and around them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they didn't have those resources, is to gently invite them to begin to explore, okay, so what could this mean for me? And to take them on a journey, if you will. So their exercises in the book, their reflections, their affirmations to kind of let you know that you're on the right track, and stories to kind of keep the engine going, if you will, and to really move and to inspire people.
But also there's absolute acceptance of whatever that answer might be, it's totally acceptable.
Yes.
There is no judgment of,
no.
you know, what it is. You have
no.
to look and discover what is right for you, what is your truth, I think, and I think that's really important.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of people ask me, you know, to give them, like, the one true answer, if you will, the silver bullet, and I go, you know, everybody is different.
Yeah.
And what I think kind of sets my work and my book apart from a lot of books that are like this that are out there today, Allison, is I really invite people to be who they are rather than fit a cookie cutter mold.
Exactly.
So it helps people get to their core, if you will, their own authentic core, and, you know, not be a carbon copy of somebody else. The other thing that I want to say about my work, and if we have time, I'd like to just talk a little bit about some of these.
Sure.
There's this, I'm going to say a framework, if you will, that I use in the book that I call the Seven Sacred Promises.
Sure.
And the promises are spiritual practices that are pretty familiar with most anybody from any, you know,
sure.
faith tradition. And I call them spiritual practices because they aren't necessarily connected to a faith tradition, but some of, you know, if you have that kind of background, you'll certainly recognize them.
Sure.
And if you have no background with religion or faith or anything like that, you'll still recognize them because they are what undergirds every creative process on the planet. Okay, so there are seven of them, and there are five of them that are extremely familiar to almost everybody. So gratitude is the first promise, faith, love, vision, integrity, creative action, and then this notion of legacy that I talked about earlier. And so those internal five, the faith, love, and vision, and so on, those are the ones that undergird every creative process. And I add gratitude onto the beginning of the promises because, to me, that's kind of the grandmother, the grandfather of all of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It opens our heart, you know, when we extend gratitude, when we say thank you, when we appreciate, when we acknowledge other people, when we acknowledge
mm-hmm.
ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything begins and ends with me, for me, with gratitude.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's really important to be grateful and count your blessings and to celebrate those. But you know what also struck me was your father's manifesting his dream. And I think with manifestation, if you really want to create in your life, you know, to live that life, you have to begin with being thankful for what you have.
Absolutely.
And also dream the dream of, you know, what it is that you want to create. I mean, it's all part of the process.
It really is. And a
yeah.
lot of people don't understand that. You know, they really don't understand that principle. You know, so many people have thanked me for this book and thanked me for my, you know, speeches or my workshops or whatever because they say, you know, you break it down in a way that I can understand. A lot of people talk about gratitude or,
mm-hmm.
you know, vision or whatever, but you break it down. And like I said, so many people don't understand the processes of gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could have written an entire book about gratitude, but I wanted
sure
to make
could.
Sure that, you know, we fit the other ones in. So
right. Well, you use a lot of spiritually based things such as affirmations,
yes.
gratitude. I mean, certainly it is woven throughout, which, you know, is a testimony to you, I think, as a spiritual teacher, you know, in many ways, and even integrity. I mean, all of which, you know, that's the basis for, you know, belief, all of that.
Yes.
And I think that's very strong in your book. But I just honestly, you know, in my experience, because, you know, basically I've been on this journey all my life, and God knows I've read enough books, and many books that in many ways mirror, maybe have the same message as you, but God, mm-hmm. you just have a way of writing it. You have a way of of it's just sneaks right up on you, and you're like, wow, it makes an incredible amount of sense. You get right to the point. You give examples. I found it to be just really profound and really well written and easy to follow, and I thought it was wonderful. I mean, as I said, you know, I apologize for not, I really, my schedule got the best of me, and I thought, oh, I can get this done, and I'm like, oh God, no, I can't. And certainly I wouldn't want to do injustice to it by, you know, not taking, as you said, savor the book. I mean, take your time, walk through it slowly, and allow it to, you know, provoke thought within you and to look a little deeper, and certainly the exercises are wonderful. So on so many levels, I'm really kind of looking forward to working my way through the rest of it.
Well, thank you. Thank
you. Yeah, she didn't do her homework. Oh, well.
No, that's, you know, that happens. And I'm really, you know, what I appreciate is your honesty and your integrity about that.
Sure.
And it sounds like you've still gotten a lot of, you know, of the material of the book without having read the entire thing. So that tells me something.
Right. Yeah. Well, I absolutely, I'm one of those people that I have a tendency to leaf through the book and look at various different things. And then I decide, okay, is this something I really want to dive into? And you know, that is a testimony as well that I was like, oh, I absolutely do. You know, it really caught my attention. I said, oh gosh, you know, and then once I got into it, I started reading it. And then, of course, in order to prepare for the interview, I had to go forward and kind of skip over things and see what the rest of it said, you know, and I thought, wow, this is really going to be something that I will definitely walk through. But it also, like I said, you know, with how I work and my work, you know, with numerology, it does identify the authentic self and the soul purpose. And in my work, I try to inspire people to, you know, we all know deep down inside from when we were little, we had probably a greater sense of who we were when we were young before a life came along and messed that all up for us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about getting back to that authentic self and who you are. And then once you understand that, accept it, because you can't be anybody but you. And
that's
you're
right.
Unique and individual. And
everybody else is taken, right?
Everybody else. That's my favorite saying. Everyone else is taken, so you might as well be the best at being you as you can possibly be.
Absolutely.
And so my job is really through numerology is try to inspire people. And it's not so much that I'm telling them anything that they don't already know. It's just simply validating it for them. And I find that it makes my work, you know, rather interesting and inspiring, because so many people have those voila moments, like I've always felt that way, and I've, yes, of course you have, because that is what your energy is.
And so, we are taught, you know, very young, at a very young age, not to trust that gut, that intuition about our lives, unfortunately. You know, one of the exercises I have in my book and that I do often in my workshops is to have people go back to the time when they were between, like, you know, maybe 5 and 12 years old, and to remember what they loved doing, what they would absolutely, you know, just lose track of time. It was when your mother or your father called you in from play, you know, in the summertime, and they had to call you by all three of your names to get your attention. You know, and sometimes I think we forget about that time in our lives.
Sure.
And as adults, you know, we go into these jobs or careers or what have you, and we lose track of the thing that really gave us that fire, that fuel, that energy.
Sure.
And so when people, you know, really get off track and they come to me for help, I say, you know, let's just take a journey backwards and go back to that old time place when you were this little kid. And almost always, you know, when people really remember and they really take time to reflect on that, they find a passion, something that is so important to them that they can either, you know, do volunteer work in, or maybe they end up, you know, changing their career or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just one of those, you know, it's a very small exercise, but it has very huge rewards.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, even myself, when I think back in school, you know, when I was actually in a parochial school, and one of the, I guess you would call them, I don't know what they call them, after school activities was public speaking. And I actually went on tournaments and went with other fellow members, and we did extemporaneous speaking and all different kinds of things. And I just
loved
doing it.
It sounds like.
Right. Well,
yeah.
And so what happened is, of course, you know, life takes over.
Yes.
And then one day when, you know, you get the opportunity to become a radio show host, it doesn't come along that often, but then all of a sudden one day I found myself on the radio, and then all of a sudden the memory flooded back to those days when I actually aspired, you know, on some level, somewhere inside of me, you know, to have a voice and to, you know, whether it's interview people or whatever the case might be, you know, that was something that I loved to do when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
But that and the fact that I discovered a numerology book when I was a kid as well.
Well, and there you go, right?
There you go. I guess I'm living my destiny. I don't know what else to say. So,
yeah.
I think that's very true. And I actually do. It's so interesting and fascinating to me that actually when I talk to clients, I ask them, what did you want to be when you were little? What did you love? So it's really, you know, that's what I say. When I see your book, I see so much of myself in there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting.
Well, as a little kid, I used to like to make lists of words, and I had no idea why I loved to make lists, but I did. And as an adult, I learned that, you know, from studying other people and working with mentors and so on, that that's one of the hallmarks of the artistic temperament, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my lists were long, and I would put these words in different combinations, and I had no idea that I was really kind of creating titles. And so now as a poet and as an author, you know, that's exactly what I do when I do my mapping for my writing projects.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, too, Allison, as a little girl, my father used to always say, Gloria, you ought to write a book. Gloria, you ought to write a book. And I thought, oh, Dad, you know, get a life,
right.
You know. And he always said that you have a ministry. And in those days, I didn't know what he meant. I thought, you know, because the only image I had of a minister was somebody, you know, in a church, you know, behind a pulpit.
Sure.
But what he really meant was that I had, like you said, I'm a messenger. And my work was to take some word out, some meaningful word out, and to spread that kind of, you know, that kind of information. And I had no idea what he meant at the time, but that's exactly what I'm doing right now.
Right. Well, it's to, usually the messenger is very much combined with the humanitarian theme.
Mm-hmm.
They go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a special purpose, which is to, you know, you define your truth, really, is through your life experiences, you come to, like, a moment of truth of what who you are and what you have learned through your experiences, and then you may be inspired to want to share that message with others, and that's often and always attached to being a humanitarian and changing the world. So,
yes.
And that's a very strong vibe in your book, my dear.
Yes.
So anyhow. Okay, now I want to just take a moment, please, because, you know, we want to be able to, you know, give people some information as to how they can purchase your book or go to your website. So if you don't mind, take a minute here and give them the information on your websites.
Okay. Well, again, the name of my book is Dare to Wear Your Soul on the Outside, and my website is Gloria Burgess, BURGESS.com. And you can buy my book on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com. You can special order it through bookstores if you want to support your independent bookstores so they don't go out of business. or you can order it through my website.
Okay.
The other thing I want to say, Allison, about that is for people who like to work together in small groups, like in twos or threes or whatever with friends, I have a resource guide on my website that you can download, and it's free.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of walks you through. It's like a little study guide. It kind of walks you through a process, and you can adapt it and use it and, you know, kind of make it your own. But you can use that as a companion guide to the book.
Wow, that's really good.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. All right. Well, I'm not so sure. I'm going to give out the numbers in case somebody's been listening. Maybe they'd like to give you a, you know, call in and ask you a question.
Sure.
So what I want to do is I want to give out the numbers. The toll-free number is 888-815-9756. You can also call in at 530-327-7602 and 530-413-4522. And one more, 530-776-5185. And if you got a question for Gloria, or maybe you want some more information about the book, or maybe you've got your own thoughts, maybe you read the book, by all means, feel free to call in. We'd love to hear from you. Also want everyone to know that if you go to the front page on BBS Radio, and you go to Visible by Numbers on Monday nights and click on the info tab, all of the information about Gloria, her website, and the book is there as well. So, you know, you can always link off from there and check out our website and also how to purchase the book, which I highly recommend. You know, and even if you think that you've got it all figured out, which sometimes I think I do, and I know I don't, you know, it can be something that really kind of sets you back to center, kind of grounds you a little bit more, and, you know, maybe defines, you know, you a little bit deeper. And I really think that it's a wonderful instrument, you know, for some soul searching and a little bit of guidance. So I think it's really a great book. So I'm giving you my thumbs up there, okay? I mean, what else can I do?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about your organization, the Lift Every Voice Foundation. I was just interested.
Yes, it's a nonprofit, as you mentioned earlier, and it's focused on young people whose parents are first generation immigrants to the United States, and the parents don't speak English as their first language.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that I started this foundation with this particular focus is most of us have parents who can advocate for us in school. Mm-hmm. You know, if something goes awry, or, you know, we need resources, they can advocate for us, you know, when we're younger, particularly in the grade schools and junior high school. And oftentimes, children that are targeted by my foundation don't have parents who can advocate for them very effectively because they don't speak the English. And so my foundation is to provide leadership development for these young people so they can advocate for themselves and to build that muscle, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also to provide resources and materials to teachers in schools that are primarily, like the majority of the students are this kind of children. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, do you do personal life coaching as well?
I do. I love to do one-on-one coaching, Allison, and I do life coaching as well as executive coaching.
Mm-hmm.
The life coaching is really about helping people either get clear about where they're going or kind of get them unstuck if they've hit a snag or a speed bump somewhere
mm-hmm.
along the way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so you do it for groups, but you also do it individually, which I think is really wonderful.
I do. Mm-hmm.
And you've been, you really, you know, one can just listen to you just for a few moments, and there's just a clarity and distinction to your words. You know, I can imagine that you are quite something to listen to, you know, when you do your public speaking, because I mean, you really do have that, you know, strength in your words.
Well, thank you. I love to speak, and you know, I think I have something to say and something to share, and I just love you know, I love engaging with people. Allison, you know, whether it's one-on-one or whether I speak to large groups. I also want to say that I lead retreats, and every summer I lead one on the island of Molokai in Hawaii.
Wow.
And it's a very, very small, intimate gathering of about 12 people.
Mm-hmm.
This particular retreat center where I love to teach only hosts one group at a time. So we're, you know, all the focus is on us, and it's just the most incredible place, I'm going to say, on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
It's right in the middle of the Hawaiian island chain, so it's a very sacred spot.
Mm-hmm.
And people come there for, you know, 5-6 days, and they, you know, come there stuck. You know, they have something going on in their lives, and they want to move through it. By the time they are in their, I'm going to say about the third or fourth day, they have a breakthrough.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time they leave, they have this sense of, just a totally renewed sense of who they are and how they can go out and contribute in the world. So
wow.
Just want to say that as well. And that that retreat is called Legacy of the Heart.
Legacy of the Heart.
Yes.
That sounds interesting. Not a bad place to be.
Yeah.
That sounds like a place I'd like to go. Absolutely.
Well, thank you. It's a lovely place, and like I said, it's a transformative environment, and the work that we do together is just life changing.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked a little bit about my dad, and I kind of want to say a little bit more about that, so
sure,
it's not
go ahead.
A teaser. But the story of my dad and how that legacy lives in me is that, you know, my dad was the first person in his family to go to college, the first person to, I'm going to say, dream outside of the box and to think, you know, to think about that. And he dreamed and he dreamed and he dreamed, and he kept talking to people about his dream. And so that's an important principle, you know, to put your dream out there, because the universe conspires to support a dream.
Absolutely.
And even though my dad, you know, he didn't expect anybody to give him a handout, you know, hard work and, you know, get, you know, working for what you have in the world was just fundamental to his life ethic. But he found himself, you know, talking to somebody and working as a janitor at the University of Mississippi, who ended up putting my father in touch with William Faulkner, who also lived in Oxford, Mississippi at the time. Okay. And, you know, there are no accidents. God put my dad there on purpose, you know,
oh, yeah.
in Oxford in the 1930s. And, you know, lo and behold, William Faulkner paid for his college education, and he taught him to not only you know, learn as much as he could, which I think my father was kind of wired to do anyway, but also to understand that even, you know, with a college education, life might not be as easy as my father may have, you know, imagined it to be. So to just stick with, you know, stick with his principles and to, you know, to always put his best foot forward and to pass on the blessings that
sure.
Mr. Faulkner had given him to other people along the way. And I've, you know, I was a beneficiary of that, and I can't tell you how many, I'm just going to say dozens, probably hundreds of people who were affected by my father's life just, you know, because of his dedication and faith and courage and belief in himself.
Right. You even said in the book that when your father passed away that you were rather overwhelmed by the amount of people that came to pay their respects because
of
the things that he did in his life to help other people, where he passed it on, the blessings that he received.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, in many ways, you know, that's really commendable, but also a testimony to your dad. So I love the fact that he wanted to build his own house, and, and he, you know, he wanted to be an architect. Is that correct? And then that didn't quite work out, so he continued his studies, and he learned, you know, and he was quite a little bit of a diversity of things. But the fact that he always loved to read and he loved to learn was just, you know, quite amazing, especially back, you know, in those circumstances.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and people ask me, you know, I have an alphabet soup behind my name. I have 5 degrees, and they go, how do you do it? And I go, you know, how could I not do it? Number one, I love to learn. And number two, I had a dad who insisted that we all go to college. You know, it wasn't a matter of if we'd go to college. It was which one.
Which one, yeah.
And the reason he insisted on that was because, you know, he said, you know, he had 5 girls. And he said, you know, someday you may have to make your own way in the world, even if you get married. He said, but you need to be an independent, strong woman. And I thought, holy simoleons, you know, I can do that. and, you know, it's been quite a journey.
Your
Allison.
Father was living, you know, beyond his years there.
He was.
Because
yeah.
Really, that wouldn't have been the thinking.
No.
I wouldn't think back.
No, not in that time.
Not at all.
But he was about, you know, he was a very much a forward thinker. There's a chapter, a little section in my book called Seeing to the Other Side of the Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a perfect description of my father. You know, some people can see about 2 feet in front of them, maybe two inches.
Uh-huh.
This guy just had a vision that, you know, was just, you know, bigger than most people. And
he eventually manifested
well.
It into his life, which I think
is
really, you know, and that's what they say with manifestation. And I think your father does a really beautiful example of it is, it's not for you to question how you're going to get there. It's just to know what it is you want.
Yeah.
And then once you've made a decision and you're aware of what you want and what will bring you joy and what will bring you happiness, then you just set about to visualize it, see it, talk about it, you know, be it, and eventually you're just going to create it and it's going to happen.
That's right.
And that's exactly what your dad did.
Exactly.
So I think
and, you know, we always talk about seeing is believing, and what you just talked about is believing. Believing is seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when you can believe it, you can envision it, and you can keep walking forward into it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's the kind of energy that you attract, the kind of people that you attract into your life, and so on. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Well, I think that your father must have been you're pretty lucky to have a guy like that, I have to say. And he must have been an incredible inspiration to you. So.
Well, he was, and, you know, I realized that not everybody was that lucky, and so that's, you know, I just had a woman the other day. I was giving a talk at a college for Women's History Month, and she said, Gloria, she says, I'm in my middle 20s, and I have a son who's 4 years old. He says, how do I raise my child to be like you? And I said, you can't. And I said, but you can pour blessings into this, you know, into your son's life. And I said, but you have to make a deposit every single day. You know, it's not about, like, you know, just having this in mind and maybe doing it every now and then. It's like every single day. And she just kind of looked at me. She says, well, nobody did that for me. And I said, well, if you want your son, you know, to have the kind of chance and the kind of foundation that I'm talking about, it's a deposit every single day.
Right. To tell your children that there isn't anything that they can't do if they want
to. That's right. That's right.
And to, you know, I so often, you know, I find, especially with counseling with clients, and, you know, the damage that's done sometimes in childhood to children where they're told they're stupid or ugly or they can't sing or they can't, or whatever the case might be, and that creates an incredible amount of damage to that child and something that inevitably it takes them years to overcome, and sometimes a whole lifetime to overcome. And when you really think about this precious, the little child that's entrusted to you, and why would you not encourage this child, you know, and like you say, make a daily deposit of love, encouragement, understanding, acceptance, you know, giving them guidance, you know, and that's really profound. I mean, making a deposit every day. I like that. I really
Every day. And, you know, one of the parts of my background that we haven't talked about yet, is this, you know, it's called family of origin work. And there's so many of us, Allison, as I'm sure you know, who are, you know, walking around, we kind of look like regular, normal human beings. But if you just kind of, you know, touch us just beneath the surface, there's all this brokenness and bitterness and anger and hatred and, you know, just stuff that was deposited in us. And sometimes it's well-meaning, but it came out the wrong way.
Sure.
And so my work with family of origin is to help people kind of peel back the layers and to go back into that place of hurt or disappointment or, you know, whatever the brokenness happens to be, and really explore that so that you can move on and transcend that and become, you know, one of those people that we call the wounded healers, you know, so that you can make something out of that old dark place and bring some light and some resilience to it. But like I said, there's so many people like that, it's you know, part of my work in the world is to not rescue people, but to help them find their own deep well of resourcefulness.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I think I don't know if this is relevant, but I can remember talking to a young man whose mother always told him that you're always going to have to work hard for everything. Nothing's going to come to you easy. You're never going to have anything. It's just the way it is. Get used to it, sort of a mentality. Mm-hmm. And that's quite a painful thing to lay upon somebody to have to have them, you know. And also, we tend to I personally thank my parents for being what they were because they helped me to show me what I didn't want to be. Because I was always able to connect to my inner child and to be able to look at my inner child and on many levels recall the emotions that certain words or actions created for me so that when it came time to give birth and to raise my own children, I did somewhat completely the opposite of what my parents did because they were really good teachers and they taught me they helped me to remember always what it's like to be a child and how sometimes the destructive behavior or words, you know, can really, you know, create problems for you. And so I really try to do the opposite and actually raise my children in a different manner, you know, with always the reassurance, always the love, always the acceptance, and whatever makes you happy makes me happy. I always used to say to my children, I don't care if you're a rocket scientist. I don't care what you do in life as long as you're joyful and happy. And I taught my children about being kind. I think that was a very important point for me in raising them, was kindness is so important. And so, you know, I taught them to always you know, be kind to everyone, no matter what, you know, that was a responsibility. That was the only thing that I really insisted on, manners and kindness.
Well, and that's the deposit that you made in them. And I bet that they have that deposit that they're, you know, I can imagine that, I don't know how old they are now, but if you made that kind of deposit in them, Allison, I'm sure that they're, you know, that's what comes out of them. That's what oozes out of them. That's the kind of energy that they live with now.
Right.
Yeah.
I often said that, you know, someone like yourself, a teacher, an inspirational leader, you know, with having all of your degrees, it took you a long, long road of going to many classes and learning to get to the point of giving advice and helping people. Any idiot could be a parent. You don't need an education, you know, and to me, it's like, I really think parents need parenting classes. I really think that parents could use some instruction. And I'm not saying that there isn't wonderful and marvelous, fantastic mothers and fathers and parents out there. But sometimes when you know, it doesn't, there's no education. You need an education. The beautiful soul that you know, it is a gift. I think that children choose their parents for specific reasons. But their souls come in, and you have this beautiful soul in your arms, and it's your job to nurture that soul and to help them to reach their destiny in life. So I don't know. I think it's a very sacred thing to be a parent.
As a teacher, I always say, you know, the one of the highest callings on the planet after being a parent
is being a teacher. Right, because teachers can't even be around children unless they've gone to school for eons. You know what I mean?
Well, and we entrust so much time. We give our children over to teachers for, you know, 8 hours a day for 12 years.
Okay.
And we, by law, we have to do that, right? Or, you know, either with that or we homeschool them. And so I do think that both of those things are just sacred work that we do. And, you know, I'm sure you know the saying that we're spirit beings having a human experience. And each one of our souls is a precious, precious thing that needs care and nurturing. You know, I think souls
spend some time with it.
Easily bruised.
But I think, like I said, I think the focus of your book, I think that is really wonderful. You know, to me, it is almost like a talking meditation in the sense that it encourages you to spend time with your soul and to commune with your soul and have that discussion and to spend time considering and thinking and pondering. And so in many ways, it's like pushing you to this place of meditation where you spend time in communion with your soul. And to me, that's what I get out of your book from what I've, you know, experienced with it. So I really think that, you know, it's a wonderful tool and then it's beautifully written. And I really appreciate the fact that you wrote it
on a personal level. Thank you.
I really do wish you a tremendous amount of success with it.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, dare to wear your soul on the outside like you're doing. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't take much, but we all need to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. One more time, my dear, because we are coming up at the end of this show. So I'd like you to really quickly give your website again. And also, if you've got one final thing that you'd like to say to our listeners, by all means, go for it.
Absolutely. My website is www.GloriaBurgess.com. And the one thing I'd like to say is, you know, after you buy my book, Dare to Wear Your Soul on the Outside, is to be gentle with yourself. And as Allison mentioned earlier, take time with the book. You know, we all want to make a difference in the world and to make the world a little bit better off than we found it. This book will show you how and give you encouragement along the way. And don't be hard on yourself. Be gentle with yourself as you are with other people.
Oh, wonderful. Well, Gloria, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
And, you know, it's such a gift to have your book, and I appreciate having that as well. And I'll get back to you. I'll finish it. By God, I'll write you and tell you what I thought.
Okay, I'd love that. Well, you have a blessed rest of the day, and thank you again for having me as a guest.
You're very welcome. Thank you for coming.
Okay.
And, everyone, I'll be back again next week. I think we're on tap to do some numerology. We're going to be talking about how numerology could get you in touch with your psychic self, and certainly be doing some readings again next week on the show, so be sure to join us then. Thank you, everyone. Pleasure being with you, and as always, I wish you abundant blessings. Good night, everyone.